The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
My guest today is Mark White. Mark is the global CTO for Deloitte Consulting here in Washington, D.C. And today we're going to be talking about Tech Trends 2015, the fusion of business and IT, a public sector perspective. It's Deloitte's latest report on public sector IT, big trends going on there. And Mark, welcome to the show.
Roger, thank you.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. There's been a lot going on in the IT space, whether, there's a lot of talk about cloud, the FITERA was passed,
right.
All kinds of action going on. And this report is really interesting. There's a lot of stuff to talk about here. But first, I want to just sort of let you give everyone a sort of overview of the report, what you were looking at and
right.
what you saw.
So we look each year at the technology trends that we think are going to make an impact on business and government mission. This is the sixth year that we've published the report externally. We go out and we get 40 to 50 candidate trends, and we sort them down based on the passion that we have in our client marketplace, the interest we have internally for our authors and subject matter experts, a number of ways, from that 40 or 50 down to 8 or 10. This year there are 8. We then step back and look at what the unifying factors might be. So we don't choose a report title and then look for chapters or topics. We, in fact, do it the other way. So this year, as we looked at it, it was pretty obvious that the underlying or perhaps overarching theme is integration. Now, we smile because that's a pretty sensible word. It gives you a picture in your head of what it might all be about. And the marketing guy said, integration, that's not very exciting. So
yeah, those marketing guys.
Yeah. So my answer was fine. Well, what do you want to call it? They said, let's call it fusion, right? The fusion of business and IT. So fine, right? The fusion of business and IT.
You've described what the use of the term fusion and integration, but from a government perspective, what is being fused?
Right. Yeah. So essentially, in fact, fundamentally, what we're saying is that it is now the case that a business or mission department strategy in the absence of an enabling IT strategy is weak. Similarly, an IT strategy that's not directly aligned with its business or mission strategy, generally pretty misguided. So now we see the essential inevitable fusion of business strategy and IT strategy.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. That's the way it always should have worked, right?
Right. Not new. Right.
Yeah, but it never. I mean, I worked for the government for 20 years, right? And the systems supported the mission,
right.
But were not necessarily designed to optimize the mission. I guess is the way.
You're right, and you mentioned FITERA, and I was with a group the other day. We were reflecting on the fact that Klinger Cohen. And then about 10 years later, eGov,
yep.
And now about
yep.
10 years later, FITERA. And the interesting thing is each of those tries to, and in fact, I personally think that the legislation actually was pretty specific to it, but put the CIO at this, often described seat at the table.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting. I'm just go back to my experience at GSA is that, one of the things that GSA, and it's not a huge agency, but it had public building service. It
sure.
had, the Federal Acquisition Service now, before it was FSS and FTS,
right?
And then central office, and they all had their own CIOs,
right?
And it's almost like FITERA addresses that from a sort of fusion or like consolidation
right.
of that perspective.
No, well done. So we talk in the report a couple of things. Your point earlier was, so the systems automated what we do for a living, business process automation.
Yep.
They didn't necessarily optimize. In fact, sometimes I had to change my business to fit the system.
That's right? That's a great point because
right.
You see that happening all the time.
Even today.
That systems drive operations as opposed to operations, driving
the systems.
Right. And even happens in policy, procurement policy. I've seen that at GSA where you know, decisions are made about certain processes because, and they relate to policy of how you award contracts or,
I'm too smart to talk about procurement policy.
I'm not going to make you do that. But just to your point about it, it's, policies or operations that directly impact contractors get changed just because systems require it to be so, as opposed to what makes big sense.
That's right. So this year, one of the 8 tech trends we called core renaissance, this idea of the core systems on which we have spent the last 3 decades investing in business process automation, automating the things we need to do. And there's a cycle, you know that. So there's a periodic revisiting of those core systems. It seems in the U.S. federal marketplace that we're at ahead, where there are a lot of those very large core transactional systems, and it's time to revisit them. So we wrote this chapter, and there's 2 parts to the trend. One piece of advice is people are afraid of rip and replace.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, I had a CIO, I certainly won't name, but I had a CIO say to me, I retire in 2 years, the next person can take care of it.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
So one part of the advice in the trend talks about sometimes rip and replace is required, and there are some ways to mitigate, to ameliorate the pain of that. And perhaps more importantly, there are 2 or 3 steps that are alternatives that lead up to that, that can either solve the problem that you're trying to fix, or maybe mitigate it, give you a little more time. So that's like one part.
Yeah, sort of like a modular approach.
It does. It is. So the idea that I might be able just to clean up the data, it turns out that the data disciplines, master data management, data quality management, actually have a fairly significant impact on the effectiveness, efficiency, longevity of a system. So if a system's getting a little long in the tooth, and I really would like to not do the open heart surgery that rip and replace might be, perhaps I can gain myself some time by doing this data cleanup, this data discipline,
sure,
as an example. Now, the other side of this, to this core systems, is that the past several years, and in federal here in the U.S., 3 to 5 years, a lot of investment has not been focused on the core, but rather at what people have called the edge. So analytics, mobile, social and collaborative, cloud, as a member in good standing of the Technology Consulting Union, I have to say cloud.
So you checked that box for the show. Okay?
Right. That's right. Thank you. And so we've spent time and money at the edge, and we've learned some things. We've learned some things in the successful deployment of analytics solutions and the successful deployment of mobile solutions, both to the employee, the federal employee, the mission holder, and to the customer, the citizen. Same thing in the social and collaborative. And how do we take those lessons and bring them back to this next iteration of the core? This touches the issue that you raised, which sometimes out of efficiency or other reasons, I've chosen to let the systems constraints, technology constraints, govern mission and policy. Some of the things we've learned, right? In the analytics space, the whole idea of persona-driven design, I can go out to the edge, ask you how you do your job, really, how you do your job, what you do, how you think about it, how you decide. And in analytics design, that's a very powerful thing to design an analytic that is impactful, actionable, right, for you.
Sure. Yep.
Let's bring that learning back into this next generation of core systems, these transactional systems design. And we're seeing that, in fact, several of the agencies and departments with whom we work have introduced something called design thinking. That's a particular description of a methodology for this persona-driven design.
So what does design thinking entail?
It's a method, and it says that rather than think about data, create, retrieve, update, and delete, CRUD, that's what I grew up with, data-driven design, right? Let me do job-driven design. And interestingly, it's not user-driven design. I recognize I'm mincing words slightly, but intentionally, right? User-driven design says you are the user. Persona-driven design says you use the system multiple ways throughout the day, right?
Okay.
So I'll design to a persona. The technology now has evolved. The maturity of the user interface and user engagement is very high. So I can afford to concentrate on that and rely on the data, that create, retrieve, update, delete, to be solid. Now, obviously, good sense, good discipline. But I'm able now to take persona-driven design and design thinking, agile delivery. That's another required buzzword, agile.
Right. You got that in too. Okay.
Yeah. One more time, agile. And bring that back to this core systems renaissance. I'll give you another example. Do you have a smartphone?
Yes, I do.
Do you have apps on the smartphone that update?
Yes.
All the time?
Yes.
Without you having to do anything?
Yes.
And do you think that's irritating or kind of interesting?
It's just kind of there, right?
Right. So I'll challenge you, if you were a CIO, go to your head of human capital, your chief human capital officer, and say to them, hey, we're putting in a new core talent management or payroll benefit system, and it's going to update sort of frequently, and I'm not going to tell you when, and there'll be no required training. The users will just get the new app next time they open it. Their hair will catch on fire.
Yeah, right? It's a lack of control, right?
Right. So what have we learned in that mobile app space that make that update so valuable, so acceptable? And so this is the idea that core renaissance, if you have to rip and replace, there's some things to think about, and maybe there's some ways to sneak up on it, like the data disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in that mitigation or replacement, how do I take what I've learned the last 3 to 5 years at the edge? Analytics, things I've learned, mobile, things I've learned, social, collaborative, cloud, cyber, by the way, and bring those to this generation of systems refresh, replacement, et cetera.
Okay. And right now, Mark, we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about CIO as Chief Integration Officer. My guest today is Mark White. He is the Global CTO for Deloitte Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark White. He is the Global CTO for Deloitte Consulting, and we're talking about Tech Trends 2015, the fusion of business and government, a public sector perspective. And hey, Mark, I know we want to talk about the CIO as Chief Integration Officer of this segment, but also I had a couple follow-up questions about the core renaissance.
Yeah, sure.
And the first one is just, you know, any reflections or observations you have between the government's view or the culture with regard to rip and replace and just that risk-averse sort of nature as opposed to corporate America? Are they more similar than we think, or are there different sort of approaches from a cultural perspective?
I would hazard to say it's more similar than you might think, right? Risk is risk. And if you have a core transactional piece of software that's running the business every day, the risk of touching that, it's literally open-heart surgery. Now, the incentives for a commercial business executive and the incentives for a public service executive are slightly different. So yep, there's some difference in behavior. But you know what? The real underlying issue is the same.
Yeah, it is. When you get to core systems, like people, like it's working.
That's right. Interesting.
My other question is just, you know, are we at a point in time in the terms of the technology cycle where rip and replace, it makes more sense from a sort of strategic perspective or not?
Excellent question. We think yes. In inserting the trend, I didn't say this at the front, but we write these trends specifically for time horizon 2. So we would expect there to be significant adoption or realization over the next 18 to 24 months. So Core Renaissance is written in anticipation over the next couple of years. We're going to see a lot of it. The essence of your question, quite good, is there some factor or factors that are making now the time? And the answer is yes. And you
rephrased the question for me. I really like that. You did a better job than I did.
No extra charge.
You want a trade seat?
Consulting business. That's right. One of the factors, honest to goodness, hate to say it, cloud.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The idea that cloud provides an alternative way to source IT services that are both elastic in price and scale. So I can try a little. If it doesn't work, I stop. If it does work, I get more. And there's an external innovation force. So the cloud services catalog, the things that are running on these external clouds, other people are investing their money to innovate the services from which you can select. So that's an example of one force. The tremendous amount of value now being ascribed to data and decision. So I'll say analytics, right?
Yeah.
Those are two examples of the consumerization force. So you come to work with your smartphone and your tablet, and you wonder why the technology at work is not at least as good as your technology at home, right? Consumerization, democratization. So these are forces that really are just kind of, they're not new, they're just coming to bear. And we believe over the next 2 years or so, really will call the question on these core systems, replacements, refresh, renaissance.
Right. And you know what? You got cloud back in there again. That's good. You checked that box again. That's very good.
I got big data in there too.
You did. Yeah. That's very good too. That's extra.
I get Internet of Things in there, I'll be totally buzzword complete.
There you go, man. Speaking of which, let's talk about the CIO's Chief Integration Officer. What does that mean?
Yeah. So CIO, Chief Information Officer, CIO, Chief Integration Officer. And there is often the case, there's sort of two sides to this trend. One of the questions we asked is why have we seen a proliferation of other executives responsible for things that really you might think would be the CIOs, Chief Data Officer, Chief Analytics Officer, Chief Innovation Officer, even Chief Customer, Chief Marketing Officer. Why have there been these other executives arising where the CIO could have been the one to fill that role? The good news is CIOs are very smart and hardworking people, so that's not the problem. The problem is that the advent of these digital forces, analytics, cloud, et cetera, yeah, right? Yeah. The advent of these has been so quick, so wide, and so deep into mission that the CIO just can't keep up. So we see then someone stepping up to be the chief analytics officer, someone stepping up to be the chief digital officer. So it is what it is, and I think the genie's out of the bottle. And by the way, no CIO should feel badly. 60 to 80% of your time as a CIO is spent keeping the lights on.
Right.
That tech debt we wrote about last year, that drag along. And so in the time you happen to have, right, other things have happened. So the advice then says, okay, if I can't beat them, I guess I'd join them, right? If I couldn't be them, right, mm-hmm. What can I do? And we believe that the answer is not be passive aggressive, right?
One might think that, but it's not.
The answer is you are the integrator. Be the convener, be the facilitator, because all of those other roles, all the other value propositions are based on data and information. And you still are the chief information officer. So CIO is chief integration officer. Step up, facilitate, help them win.
Right. And that, and from that perspective, one of the things that a CIO always has had to know, but I think it's, I mean, from what you're saying, you've got to understand all the different missions that your organization, right, has in their different departments. And even like GSA, like the example I use that I know, that, you know, there's a fleet component to it, along with a contracting component, along with, managing real estate. I mean,
it's a lot of domains, and no single woman or man are going to be able to have that in their heads.
Right.
Do you remember, you're using names that throw me back a few years here. So you remember when—
I'm showing my age.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, the idea of business analyst.
Uh-huh. Right?
And when I grew up in the profession, business analyst was actually a very important, prestigious role. You were the translator, the interlocutor between the mission need and the technology realization.
Right.
And for reasons I don't quite understand, business analyst became a little less significant. We see that coming back more now because this idea, of persona-driven design, mission-driven design, right? You need that person who really gets the business and knows the capabilities or even the constraints of the technology.
Right. So would that be like your chief analytics person or your chief?
I would wonder if it could be the chief, but even then the missions are pretty broad. I mean, the mission of GSA is broad. The mission of Homeland Security is broad.
Within the IC, it's
pretty compartmentalized. So you tend to have these business analysts, customer analysts is sometimes what they're called, that are that sort of pivot point.
So another question that comes to mind when you describe this integration and trying to pull to leverage this is it sort of like the CIO is championing for lack of a better term, a shared services model within the agency or within the department? Is that so you leverage and you're using, you're integrated to a platform or a set of platforms that you share across as opposed to the stovepipes?
Yes. So absolutely, yes. Shared service evokes something, sometimes emotional things amongst us. Your point, however, is exactly on that every chief analytics officer, a chief digital officer, a chief, all of these, the raw material, the source of value is the information and the data. So we wrote a third trend this year called dimensional marketing. And it's funny when we talk to public sector about this, they go, marketing? I don't do no stinking marketing, right?
Sure.
Now, it's funny. If you look at some public sector missions, they're very retail-like missions, all the way over to the other end of the spectrum, sort of very regulatory missions. Regardless, there is a constituent. There's a consumer of value. And the point of dimensional marketing is every silo wants to talk to that constituent, to that customer.
Right.
And they are, but in pieces. And so the CIO in this case has the opportunity to be the integrator to bring that common definition of customer, of constituent, of citizen together and provide a set of services that are uniformly valuable to all of the people that need to use it. By the way, using persona-driven design. Because the customer at U.S. Postal Service, when their retail counter buying a stamp, when their commercial bulk mail providers, right, different personae of customer. So you're exactly right. Opportunity as chief integration officer to be at the center with information as in their hand as the currency. An example of that, customer information, a consolidated view of customer with multiple windows onto it based on who in the mission needs to talk to
sure.
the persona.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. And right now we do have to take our next break. My guest today is Mark White. He is the global CTO for Deloitte Consulting. And when we come back, we'll talk about the IT worker of the future. I'm looking forward to that conversation. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Fred News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Fred News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark White. He is a global CTO for Deloitte Consulting. And we're talking about Tech Trends 2015, the fusion of business and IT, a public sector perspective that Mark worked on extensively. Hey, Mark, in this segment, I know you got a section in your report about the IT worker of the future and in a government perspective. So I'm very interested in hearing your thoughts on that. So I'm just going to open up to, you know, what does the IT worker of the future look like?
You know, it's interesting. This one, Roger, is a favorite worldwide. I get a chance to speak and present and discuss this with CIOs, commercial and public sector around the world. This one's a favorite. If you sit down with an IT executive, chief information officer, and you ask her or him, what's your top issue? Right. Okay, well, admittedly, the first answer almost always is budget, so let's take budget off the table for a moment.
Money, yeah.
Right. The second answer is almost always a toss-up between cyber and talent. So looking at the talent issue this year, a conversation with a CIO actually here in the U.S. federal government sums it up. What she said was, you know, I don't know what I have exactly. She said, I'm pretty sure I don't have what I need. And I suspect I have some things I don't need anymore skills-wise, but I really don't know what I have. And there's this unease, this concern. We looked at one client, public sector mission, 30% of their IT talent slated to retire within 3 to 5 years. That's a pretty big graying of the population, if you will,
sure.
Right? So when you think about the idea that we're moving forward rapidly on these digital technologies, that we're looking at issues at refreshing these core systems, some of which have been around, no kidding, 20 to 30 years.
Yep.
And I know that's just shocking, but those numbers are not made up. Talent becomes a core issue. So talking with one of my colleagues, a woman named Judy Pennington, Judy's one of my partners who concentrates on talent in the IT organization. I said, Judy, I mean, how are we going to talk to CIOs about talent? When I begin talking about human resource and talent issues, their eyes roll back in their heads. She goes, yeah, I know. Just like when I begin talking about systems to the Chico, their eyes roll back in their heads. I go, okay, fair, right.
Right, right.
So we decided to use a metaphor that's pretty familiar to IT executives today, and that's the idea of portfolio management. So project and program portfolio management.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So much discussed, frequently taken advantage of, not universally subscribed, but you get the idea of portfolio management. When I say I'm going to manage all of my systems and IT services assets in a portfolio, what's the first thing you do? You go get an inventory so you know what you have. You look at that inventory and you sort the systems into subcategories, portfolio categories, right? Perhaps broadly, one of the sets of categories would be buy, hold, and sell, right? Things that I need more of, skills of which I have a shortage. Hold, things that are important, that are critical in the near and midterm. Sell, if you will, repurpose, deprecate, skills that may not be, you know, my software engineering skills. No one's writing PL1 and not much COBOL anymore, I guess. But so buy, hold, sell, and treat your IT talent as though it were a portfolio of talent that you're managing under a strategy. That simple metaphor has really done pretty well with IT executives to be able to engage around the issues. And then there's a good bit of discussion around, okay, I get things I don't need anymore, and I can begin retraining and repositioning people.
Right.
I understand fairly well what I have now and want to keep and keep fresh and challenged. What about the white space, the things I need more of,
right,
and more interestingly, the things I might have never had before? So you're probably familiar with the acronym STEM,
yes.
S-T-E-M, science, technology, engineering, and math. STEM skills have been those that we in the technology space, IT space, have recruited for decades. And I myself, I mean, that's, you know, from an educational background. In looking at what we need next, we were looking in the STEM space. Recalling that we said, you know, in this core renaissance, what have we learned in some of the edge that we should bring back? Well, in particularly in mobile, we've learned the importance of good design, like good visual design, human engagement, the idea that I should engage you both from your brain and from your heart and your gut, right?
Right.
Emotionally. And so we looked at the other skills.
So I'm looking at my phone right now.
Yeah, exactly.
That.
So that,
right.
So that you see if it engages you, right?
Yeah.
So we looked at the other skills that we have begun to find really valuable and perhaps unusual. And we said, not just STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, but STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, or architecture and math, or anthropology and math. So what do art, architecture, and anthropology have in common other than they all begin with A and so make my acronym work?
Right.
They're how humans engage with the worlds around them. Art, how you engage emotionally. Architecture, how you engage physically and in a utility fashion. Anthropology, how your culture and social circumstances cause you to engage. Example. Really interesting piece of work for a government department, a pseudo-governmental entity that are going back to blank sheet white paper to reconsider their customer experience. So they're a retail-like agency. Consider their customer experience. And we were fortunate to compete and win for designing everything from how you deal with their customer service at the counter, on the website, at a kiosk, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
First thing that the leadership team, our guys on that did, is they sent ethnographers out to the places where people were actually consuming the service.
You'll have to, that's a big word.
What is an ethnographer? Goes out, is really literally tells the story of what's happening and why.
Okay.
Right? So why are you here? What's the purpose of your transaction? Where did you come from? Where are you going to? How are you feeling about this? What was good? What was bad? Literally writing the story of the individual customers and clusters. There were about 8 clusters that typified the customers. Those are ethnographers. That's a skill that if you and I had talked with a CIO a couple of years, if you had asked me a couple of years ago,
right,
do you need storytellers, ethnographers? Do you need social anthropologists that understand the difference in how an uptake? The United States is a huge country. When I do this in Europe, within a country in Europe, the ethnography and the social anthropology is relatively refined.
The band is right.
Right, but the countries there are the size of our states.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So the U.S. coast to coast, top to bottom, that's a really broad swath. And so there are these skills, art, architecture, anthropology, et cetera, that we believe take us from STEM to STEAM and change the landscape. So where's the CIO going to go hire the next studio artist? Where's the CIO going to next go hire the next mathematical sociologist? Yeah, I know. Let's pause. There is such a thing as mathematical sociologists. And that's the other half of the next generation of IT talent.
Okay. What does that say about, we have about a minute left for this segment. What does that say about technology? Does that say things are so automation or just the capabilities of technology to design something that actually can take advantage of people's behaviors and the way they can? I mean, is that what we're talking about here?
Isn't that amazing? So I laughed earlier in this earlier segment about create, retrieve, update, delete, data crud.
Yes.
Right. And that was hard work. And we spent a lot of computing power taking care of just the data processing and data integrity. Now the technology itself is lifted up both in terms of raw power and the abstraction. At what level am I solving the problem? And I can begin to care about those things. And by the way, your smartphone spoiled you as a user.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So
Everything else is frustrating. Your expectations
now are much different than they were.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
That's a great point. My guest today is Mark White. He's a global CTO for Deloitte Consulting. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit maybe about ambient computing. I like to hear what that's all about as part of the report. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark White. He is a global CTO for Deloitte Consulting, and we have been talking about Tech Trends 2015, the fusion of business and IT, a public sector perspective. And Mark, in this segment, I think it's an interesting topic, a fascinating topic, and you touch on it in the report, and that's ambient computing. So I'm just going to open up. Tell me what ambient computing is.
So it's a perfect softball because it allows me to say the final required buzzword, Internet of Things.
Okay, IoT. Very good. Right. I wanted to make sure you got that in there.
Buzzword bingo. We actually began writing this chapter as an Internet of Things chapter. And what happened was it turned out that there was a less clarity than we had hoped on exactly how IoT delivered value. Remember, this is about business-led, mission value, technology enablement. So first thing we did is we stepped back and we said, okay, where are we finding clusters of value in this IoT thing? One of the clusters is pretty obvious, and it's very mature, and it's this industrial internet, machine-to-machine communications, signal sensor processing, what General Electric have done in the industrial internet. In fact, I think they coined that term. Very mature, in place, in Europe particularly called Industry 4.0, right? Second cluster is in what we're seeing the communications companies, for example, Cisco coined a term called Internet of Everything. Now, it's actually quite important and sophisticated. It says in order to handle all the traffic of these predicted 50 billion things, including us talking on the, we're going to have to change how the internet is architected. That's really important. It's also difficult and will take a while. So the third cluster is so-called Internet of You, and that's the place where we see IoT generating the most immediate value. So I don't know, again, we talked about your smartphone. You may have an exercise device. You know, you may have a smart watch. You may have a tablet. Your car has at least one IP address in it.
Yes.
You know, you drive to your garage. The garage door opener has an IP address. All of the thermostats in your house, right? All of these devices. And so we looked at Internet of View and we said, how do we describe that value expressed as a trend? And then in this particular conversation, a trend to public sector. I will admit to you that of all the eight trends this year, when we looked at public sector, we did a couple of little gauges, right? How relevant do we think this trend is for federal? How timely is it soon, later, really far from now? And how ready are we? Are we ready or not? And so this one is one that we think could be very impactful, but is later. So that with that caveat, let me give you an example. Talking IoT, Internet of Things, people really want to talk about the devices and the connectivity, devices and connectivity. And they're really interesting, but with just devices and connectivity, I've yet to find a value proposition. So I add the data, the payload between the devices, right? Now, device connectivity data, I have a value proposition. What we said in Internet of You is I add two more things. I add the user, the person, the entity, and the context, very high context. Where is it? When is it? Who is it? What came before? What comes next? Those kinds of context. So I've got the device and the connectivity and the data and the entity, person, individual, and the context. Now we believe we've hit a second level of value at IoT, story example. So later today I will fly. My phone will buzz a few minutes before I'm supposed to go get in the car. I'll go get in the car. I'll drive to the airport. Hopefully not while I'm actually driving. I'll open the app. I'll get the airline app. I'll find my reservation. I'll check in. It'll give me the little square QR code, the square scanner code. And I'll put it back in my pocket. I'll park. I'll go in. I'll go up to the checkpoint. I'll get my phone out. You know what? The app is closed. Find it. Find my reservation. Find the QR code. Show that and my static picture ID to an agent, checkpoint agent, in order to get credentialed to move through the checkpoint. Right?
Right.
All right. Well, so the story I'm about to tell as an alternative is perfectly possible today, is implemented in part by a number of pieces, but yet still requires the human to be the integrator, all right? So my phone knows that I'm going to fly today because I have on my calendar and in my email the reservation, the ticket, et cetera, from the airline. It knows that I like to be in a domestic flight. I like to be at the airport 60 minutes ahead. It knows where I'm sitting, and it can go and check the traffic and see that the commute from where I'm sitting to the traffic is X minutes. Y minutes ahead, it'll call an Uber, right?
Right.
It'll notify me 5 minutes before that the Uber's at the curb because it knows how long the commute should be, and I want to be there an hour in advance. As I go, I get close enough to the airport that it actually knows that I'm going to the airport, I'm at the airport, fetch the boarding card forward. I go up to the checkpoint. Rather than showing you a visual QR code, which unfortunately is hackable, and a static picture ID, which unfortunately is also not always totally reliable, my phone has four radios on it. Roger, why can't the radio in my phone talk to the radio in the checkpoint? Because, by the way, use your thumb to scan in on your – use a biometric token to scan in your ID on your phone.
Yep.
So it's biometric authentication. Your phone has a great security token. It can assert to the checkpoint device by
that
radio
you are who you are.
That
right.
I am who I am.
Yep.
Now, at which point – I know you'll be surprised, but every checkpoint has multiple cameras pointed at you.
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that.
Right. So your phone asserts that it's Roger. Then the cameras look at you. And by the way, if I'm not trying to say who might this be, but is this Roger?
Yes.
The quality of facial recognition is quite high, right? So those three cameras look at you. They say, indeed, that assertion from the phone was Roger. I believe it's Roger. Let him through. That was smarter, faster, lower cost, higher efficiency, and actually lower risk. That's ambient computing, bringing all five of those elements to bear on the task at hand.
That was great. That was a great story. Man. I mean, that's awesome. When you were going through and I think about examples of, you know, helping people with traffic
yes.
or, you know, the examples in the report about Washington, D.C. and, you know, and,
right.
And crime and just, you know, the sensors and things like that. And, absolutely.
And so you've heard the stories, the idea that I can put audio sensors where gunshots actually are triangulated
yep.
and
yep.
then video cameras are routed. And at the same time, the nearest law enforcement officers
are
notified,
yeah.
alerted, or dispatched.
Yeah.
The ability to take all of the devices, all of the connectivity, all of the data, add the people and high context, right?
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
we've become quite familiar with.
Right.
I got to admit, there is a delicate line between what's helpful and insightful and what's creepy.
Yes,
yes,
that's a good point. It's like,
and when
how
you're
much
the government,
do we want to know about what we're doing?
That's right.
Yeah, we don't have much time left, but I want to just touch quickly on cyber.
Oh, good.
And one of the earlier segments when you're talking about the CIOs, you're talking about budget first, and then there's a sort of toss up between cyber and
talent,
and talent capabilities. What's going on in cyber?
Good. It is at the nub of the matter, right? Every time. I mean, we want to be innovative, but we have to be risk intelligent, right? So I want all of this core renaissance and all of this amplified intelligence and ambient, and we have to be risk intelligent. So there's a cyber implication. In each chapter this year, we did it a little differently. In each chapter this year, we actually wrote a small section talking about the cyber implications of the trend. But let me step back from that and just speak more broadly for a second.
Sure.
So we would say, I would certainly say, that we have spent a great deal of money on cybersecurity, detect, prevent, repair, and not without cause. It's necessary. It just turns out it's not sufficient. Because if you believe, as I do, that there is no such thing as hacker-proof, then being secure is not enough. You need to be secure and vigilant for the ongoing threat. Using technologies to triangulate the so-called advanced persistent threat or APT triangle, right? And we see that happening. What we believe the trend at the forefront is, again, this sort of 18 to 24 months, is we will see a lot more time and attention and money spent not just on security and not just on vigilance. You must. They're valuable. But also on resilience. So if we're not hacker-proof and the sophistication of the adversary, the bad guys, continues to increase, then I need to engineer my business. I need to architect my mission, the technology, the people, and the process to be resilient in the face of penetration. So secure, vigilant, and resilient.
Right. Deloitte's going to be doing some additional work on that.
We are.
As well.
So if you, we do the tech trends every year. Thank you for asking. We do the tech trends every year. We're in the throes now of, we've down selected to 8 for 2016. One of them speaks very much to this issue of resilience architecture.
Right. That sounds great. And I'm going to have you come back on the show and talk about the 2016 report.
I'm excited
for sure.
To do it. So I'm excited.
I want to thank
it.
My guest today, Mark White. He is a global CTO for Deloitte Consulting. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.